Hello, Taurus and Taurus Rising, and welcome to In These Times, the 2019 Autumn Reading. My name's Eric, and I'm here with some new thoughts about your astrology. Starting on the 4th of September at 4:03 p.m., and I'm working with a guiding principle behind all of these readings, something that I encountered a few weeks ago on a kind of exploring mission up at the DK Tibetan Buddhist Monastery in Woodstock. I had never been up there till earlier this year, and I have found some interesting new things there. And one of them is a book called Bardo, Interval of Possibility, which is kind of like everything I was hoping to find in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, but was cautioned about the insertion of Chinese propaganda from the old days into the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Anyway, I found what I was looking for in this book, and then was pleasantly surprised to find the following statement on a day when I was really thinking, man, the world is just in such rough shape. I mean, how does it matter that, you know, we do anything? Like, what's, you know, I don't usually feel that way, but it kind of caught up with me. And then I found this rather refreshing statement. The author, by the way, is Karthar Rinpoche, Kenpo Karthar Rinpoche, in a magnificent translation. And he says, I mention all of this and comment on it at length because it's important to understand that as bad as times are, the Dharma is not affected or diminished in any way. We do indeed live in an age of decadence, but the Dharma is not decadent. The Dharma is the same as it's always been. The word Dharma literally means, it's a Sanskrit word, it means acting as if to hold the world together. And in this case, the Rinpoche is talking about the central teaching of that approach. And additionally, the conveyance of that teaching by example. So it's kind of part verb and part noun in that respect. And he's saying this is basically a kind of a living thing, a living spiritual creature, and that as much as the world is in a time of decadence, which means that the world appears to be falling apart, and there are many people acting adharmically, meaning they're acting as if to rip the world apart rather than to put the world together or hold the world together to do their little part, they're exploiting the fact that we live in this age when things are being made to crumble, not maintained, and where it's very easy to exploit others and the fragile systems that we've built, that the central teaching and the central example and the challenge, the mandate, the central teaching of any spiritual student, any seeker or aspirant, is unharmed, that the central teaching is unharmed. And even in a time of decay, of decadence, of breakdown, which is when we live, that we still get to act as if to hold the world together. And as I've contemplated this idea and now talking about it for the fifth or sixth time or so, when else would we need to act as if to hold the world together, to do our little part? And that includes holding our lives together, doing what we can to make sure that we as individuals expend our energy in ways that are productive and efficient rather than in ways that are self-depleting in some way. So one of the things we all count on Taurus for, and that's to say Taurus people and the concept of Taurus and to a large extent the earth signs, is integrity. That is to say holding the world together. And I have a lot of Taurus friends, and one of the things I love them for is persistence, and also that pretty much all of them have a conscious relationship with tradition. So it's not just a thing that they skim over or glaze over, or dip into every now and then, or go to synagogue on Rosh Hashanah and then forget it for the rest of the year, but rather live in ways that make contact with something old, something in the past, and something worth preserving. And this is structurally described by your chart by the placement of the earth signs. So you have, obviously, an earth sign is your primary reference, your sun, moon, or rising. So we're calling that the first place because it's the primary reference. And then this puts Virgo on the fifth, this very creative zone in the chart where people are inclined to take risks and to explore, experiment, and have fun and do the kinds of things that are intended for fun and sometimes seem like needlessly risky fun, or express themselves in some way as creative people or artists, all about the fifth. And then the additional earth house is the ninth, and this is Capricorn. And this, I think, really is the source of the value of orthodoxy, the value of sticking to the central teaching or the central tradition, and consciously maintaining something from the past because it's the right thing to do. There's another branch of Tantra that calls us the preserver. It's a necessary function to have in any organization or family or friendship. There needs to be the quality of the preserver, the one who maintains what has been gained. And that, I think, is beautifully described when you describe Taurus. It might not describe every person, but it's a wonderful fit. And part of this comes from the ninth house, which is supposed to be the futuristic one, and the one that describes that which is exotic and distant and a little odd, maybe, and outside of the ordinary, is oriented on Capricorn. It's oriented on the past. And this doesn't mean that you're not also very good at invoking the future, but what I've seen in terms of the action of Capricorn is that a little bit goes a long way, and that any true revolutionary has the ability to honor tradition. And you have Capricorn located in this most important house where your philosophy of life is indicated, and that's the ninth house. And what you've had going on in the ninth house for now 11 years is that Pluto has been running through the ninth house, and this has been an ongoing upheaval in your spiritual values, and also a refreshing of your spiritual values, a kind of digging in and turning over the earth. And that has very quietly, or perhaps not so quietly, rumbled along, and the effect has been to draw you into a long journey of questioning your beliefs. Now, this is a very good thing, and I suggest that you give yourself credit for being willing to do it, and that you keep the momentum going, which is probably being helped by the presence of Saturn in the ninth house. And Saturn does very well in the ninth house, although it can reverse the process of Pluto, in that Pluto really wants to dig in and see what's there and rip things apart, and Saturn is kind of an emissary of tradition, and now the two are getting together. There's going to be a conjunction. So you're about to experience this once per generation, meaning three times per century, conjunction of Saturn and Pluto on January 12th in your ninth house. And so this is, it looks like it's completing a kind of a massive undertaking of a spiritual update, kind of a multiple lifetime spiritual update, where you have kind of transformed from the person whose main role is to uphold and preserve tradition to the one whose role is to ignite tradition and to bring it up to date and to make sure that the spirit is still in spiritual. So what can happen when a tradition gets too crusty is that the life is squeezed out of it and can no longer express the original vitality and life force energy that is at the heart of all religious traditions. There's always the visionary, there's always the seeker who wasn't really planning on having the experience, whoever it might have been, and then suddenly they have a revelation, and then like for thousands of years people are following along on that, and the oxygen can get squeezed out of that. And what is happening to you now is that you are basically allowing your belief systems to be cracked open and to have the soul energy be the thing that comes through and guides and prevails over the need for any form of orthodoxy and tradition. And this is a theme of your charts at this time. This is not only happening here, it's happening in other places. And I'd like to keep moving through the earth signs and give you a sense of what this is about, the sense of what you may be being prepared for, because it would look as if you're being prepared for a whole new level of growth and achievement in the world, unlike anything that you have ever done before. And while I have no doubt that your persistence and your efforts and your, let's say, adherence to the tradition of challenging and growing into growing tradition so that it is a living thing rather than a static thing and books on the shelf and things people do they don't know why they do, you're making a contribution to moving all of that along, and this is hard work, and it's work that is likely to get a result. So the next thing going on with Taurus is the big news in this era, still at the beginning, still about 6 years to go, which is Uranus in your birth sign. And this is almost humorously the least Taurian thing you could possibly have. I mean, in my estimation, Taurus are the people you call up when you need to know how exactly you're supposed to dress for a certain occasion. And if I ever had to go to the White House, I would bring a Taurus because I'd want to at least have someone who was connected to protocol and concepts of beauty held by Taurians tend to have a classical flavor. This resonates with the ninth house Capricorn. And now you've got Uranus bursting through this house, and this is the planet that is about revolution against tradition and rapid acceleration of awareness and rapid acceleration of transformation. And so it doesn't really get less Taurian on one level, except that there's this other element of Taurus that is about doing exactly this. It's about tapping into this inner fire of Taurus that is sometimes accessed, but not always. And when it is, tremendous things are possible. Major contributions. And if nothing else, really good work. Really breakthrough types of developments. And so Uranus is giving you the freedom to live beyond the familiar and to be a different person every day. And I imagine it's got to feel pretty good to have this energy and to, in a sense, be set free to be as different as you want to be and to be a little weird and to challenge yourself with new ideas and new ways of presenting yourself and challenging yourself to change much more rapidly than you might normally do so. Right? There's a pointlessness to resisting the quality of your honesty. You just have to go with it, and this is an asset for you. Uranus joins a couple of other slow-moving planets in your sign, one of which is called 1992 QB1, or Albion, the first planet discovered beyond Pluto. So Pluto was discovered around 1930 and was thought to be the only thing of its kind, and then in 1992 some enterprising astronomers named Jane and Dave pointed their telescope out into the outer reaches of space, big telescope up in Hawaii, and found this thing that became called Albion. And Albion has been working your sign for quite a long time, and it has been kind of like soaking you from the inside with a very subtle transformational energy. A growth energy that's fundamentally different from Pluto, because, you know, as necessary as Pluto is and as helpful as Pluto can be, it also has a kind of a change or die feeling. Whereas Albion is much more forgiving and works with your time frame and is not forcing you to do anything. It's more like a gentle luring into the possibility of growth and of and of transformation. And I think that there's, in a similar way, well, in a corresponding way to Pluto, there is a sexual message of Albion, which is similar to Vesta in that it is your being in the role of helping others grow and transform. There's kind of a service quality to Albion that can, you know, even be arm's length from the situation, possibly someone you're not directly involved with, or someone who comes to you for help for some reason, or it can be the way that you work with a partner or treat a partner. But there's this teaching energy that Albion QB1 has. And the ability to hold space. If you're familiar with Vesta, which is making a long visit to your sign, I considered QB1 to be kind of a super Vesta. So there's the space-holding facility and the assisting others in their transformational process. Big stuff for you now, because you are being given the chance to take up a teaching role that you have never had before. And then there's two other small points. One is Sedna, which is on this like multi-decade, God knows how many, century. I forgot how long Sedna is in Taurus. And then there's, I'm not going to say much about that, but there's one called Mors Sumnus, another slow mover. Again, there's a lot of these new slow movers that are not asteroids. They're out beyond Pluto. And what Mors Sumnus is talking about is awakening. There's an old poem by Adrienne Rich written at the dawn of the women's movement of the 1960s, and the poem is called When We Dead Awaken. Maybe an essay. When We Dead Awaken. And so the quality of Mors Sumnus is about awakening from long sleep, from long slumber. And so it would seem, based on all of these factors, two of the most important modern planets, Pluto and Uranus, so prominent in your chart, plus Albion, plus Mors Sumnus, that you are incarnating now in the current world as an agent of transformation as an agent of awakening. Now, as every agent of awakening knows, the first thing you have to do is wake up yourself. And that has its challenges, but I suspect that you are rising to them beautifully. Except let's talk a little bit about the possible downside of having Uranus in your sign, which is a sense of persistent restlessness. There is that side to Taurus. I've always seen that intellectually, creatively curious, restless core deep within. But one of the ways that you work with that is to make sure that you have your little piece of heaven carved out, whether it's your home or your sewing room or your garden or whatever that little corner of the world is where you feel absolutely at home. And one thing I've noticed about Taurians in their living spaces is that they are somewhat humorously persistent. And most of the Tauruses I know live in the same building. They lived same room, same apartment, house, whatever, that they did on the day that I met them, whether it was 30 years ago or 5 years ago. They almost all are in the exact same place. That's not the quality of Uranus in your sign. There's a restless quality, and it's a little bit like being like subtly zapped and having energy injected into you all the time, and a restless quality that is difficult to allay in some way. And there are a few possible approaches to this if it is true, and I think that they would work even if you're having the time of your life with Uranus. But it's understandable, I think, if you're like, okay, this has been wonderful. I've woken up a different person every day for the last 53 days. I'd like to just be me for a few days. Is one approach is going to a deeper level, learning a skill like meditation and making contact with the thing inside you that is unchanging. This thing that the Rinpoche was calling the Dharma, well, that has a corresponding, let's say, inner spiritual flame that you can make contact with and just be with and hang out with and be reminded that though there would seem to be all this restlessness and that you're an agent of change and that you're you've now become quite consciously or just noticed you're having the effect of being a provocateur, even when you're not planning on it, that actually, there's some consistent passion inside of you that's just always there, and a peaceful place inside you that is always there. But it may not be comfortable all the time having Uranus in your sign. It may have been granting you a wish that you had to be a certain way, though I would say that it is probable that Uranus in your sign feels better than Uranus in your previous sign, Aries, where the Uranian energy was coming from like a source that you couldn't point to. It's almost like a sound that you can't tell where the sound is coming from, only it's this high voltage energy. And once it cracked through from the 12th into the 1st, that is to say moved from Aries into Taurus, the quality grounded into your body. So keeping an inner focus is going to be helpful, but it's only part of what you've got going on. Another part of what you've got going on, and this corresponds with this spiritual, let's say, soul revolution of Pluto in Capricorn, right, bringing the soul into the ideas and concepts of spirituality, actually finding this, hot pulse of energy deep underneath all of that is the fifth house, Virgo. And at the moment, basically, almost everything is in Virgo as of this reading. That's the current event associated with this particular set of readings at this very moment. Venus, Mars, Mercury, and the Sun are all in Virgo, along with Juno, the asteroid associated with marriage, and then a point called Trans-Pluto. And so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 energies. Just looking at a commercial chart, you know, kind of out of the box astrology chart, and then there are subtle points as well. And so that's a whole bunch of energy coming through Virgo, and Virgo is your house of creative expression and taking of risks. Now, one of the things we can say about Taurus is that you work with filters. There's a lot of filters associated with, with Taurus. And these help you by doing things like assisting you in being appropriate for different situations in your life and being a kind of a master of appropriateness. And then additionally, focusing your means of expression, allowing a certain refinement in the way that you express yourself, no matter what it is you're doing. The challenge of having Virgo associated with the fifth house or place is that these filters can tend to dominate you, and in a sense, you become more oriented on the filter than on what is being expressed through the filter. And Capricorn in the ninth works a similar way. Capricorn in the ninth provides that quality of orthodoxy that you have been slowly cracking open, and you know, finding out what actually is down there in the catacombs, what all those little flasks and vials and scrolls contain, right? To get to the real stuff, right? To get to the thing itself and not the myth. Well, a similar process is going on in Virgo, and this is a kind of igniting of your creative, let's say your creative process, your creative abilities. And it might not have, lit up quite like this had there not been this, new moon and major grand conjunction surrounding the new moon. And so this is a pure revitalization. And so one of the things to do with this restless quality you have of Uranus coming through your sign or your ascendant, and then Pluto and the Pluto-Saturn conjunction splitting open all of your long-held, multi-generational, very important, by the way, I'll come back to that in a second, multi-generational concepts of what's orthodox, conflicted as they may have been. Now you've got a similar thing going on with your creative abilities, which is saying, okay, we don't need this to be the kind of intellectual exercise that Virgo often is. Rather, let's dive into an integration experience where, like, I'm going to do things that just help me feel like I'm more me, that involve mixing different abilities, mixing different interests in your life. And also, the fifth being one of the most playful and exciting houses of experimentation, it lends itself very well to erotic exploration. And so it would not surprise me if you were not thinking a lot about sexual experiences, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if you were having a few extra ones, because there's, in as much as this form of astrology can show that there's opportunity, there is both opportunity and also motivation. But more than motivation, I think, and this is significant for all the earth sign houses as they're playing out in your chart, more than motivation, there is you giving yourself the freedom to explore and to experiment, the release of inhibition. So earth signs can be really inhibited. They can, you know, seem extremely free, but then they have that place where they just like reach this point of inhibition, and that can be frustrating. And what you've got going on now is pretty much every factor that can be conspiring to set you free from any lingering inhibitions you've got available now. And so you may as well make use of it while you have it, because it will be fun to do so. And the more you experiment, the more you will grow and the more you will change. So you are setting yourself up to not be held back by anything that might hold you back in the future. You're kind of clearing out, it's almost like digging out the channel ways and clearing your mind and, seeing what it's like to hold the church service out in on the lawn instead of in a dark building on Sunday morning. Well, why don't we get out in the light and see what's actually, see each other and experience something of the natural beauty of this thing we call spirituality or art or sex in some way. And so this is really energy of like, go out in the forest, squish your toes in the mud, climb a mountain, smoke pot, and look around and see what like there is that is not what somebody said that there was supposed to be. So this is coming at you from many different angles. There's other exciting ones that I haven't mentioned yet. Maybe I'll get to them in a second. But I want to talk about the multi-generational influence that is currently being kind of melted away in the opposite of the sense of the preserver, right? The preserver maintains things the way that they are as best as possible, and Pluto kind of upends all of that. And one of the things about the ninth house is that it contains, it's one of two houses, or perhaps three, that is famous for containing the latent psychological baggage of our parents. And one of my teachers, a wonderful astrologer named Martha Westcott, says that it contains the hidden psychological legacy of mother. And this is something we all need to be vigilant for, the ways in which the hidden psychological legacy of our parents and grandparents just weighs us down and gives us negative expectations, and also makes it difficult to live in such a way that is free and celebratory. And if you, there's no other way to describe your chart than that. I mean, you've really got that going on, and yet there can be this burden that's handed down to us. And so I think that of all the processes I've described, that includes Uranus going through your sign, this big wake up and becoming this energy of an awakener, and this little revolution going on in Virgo right now, where you're being kind of infused with this teenage energy of art and passion and sex and curiosity and the desire to do things that go off the normal menu, things that are a little bit riskier. The most important one is Pluto in the ninth house, I think, and this is because you are so naturally oriented on a spiritual position without really having to do much, and yet there is so much false belief that is passed down from generation to generation. There's so much misery that is passed down in the form of both spoken religious orthodoxy and at the same time hidden, veiled, insidious agendas. And so it is a fair reading to say that the conjunction of Pluto and Saturn, which takes place on January 12th, is attempting to set you free from something. There is a lot of energy needed to help you in the process of breaking through to a deeper level of your reality, and that there is something profound from the past that you are wanting to let go of. As I speak at 4:37, Saturn and Pluto are rising, but I'm noticing that Saturn is in a very close conjunction to the south node of the moon, and that is rising. And the south node Saturn conjunction, like in this actual chart set for Kingston at this exact time, and what's rising can just point the astrologer to the relevant thing at that time. And the relevant thing at that time is a reminder that when you've got Saturn, the south node, and Capricorn together, there is something about not only a reckoning with the past, there's something about a need to let the past go. I would not inherently call it desperate, but it might very well be like, there's got to be something that's going to end. And it's important that you know what that thing that is going to end is. Now, if you're concerned that this is just a little too rad, just a little too risky, I would point out something that I read in a very old book by an author called Valens. God knows when it was written, like in 500 or something, that the South Node offers protection from malefic influences. And so you are doing this with protection, and it is the time to do this. So, you know, astrology can like speak, and then it can speak loudly, and then it can yell, and then it can deliver, you know, hurricane force winds that are trying to convey a message. And the message that's being conveyed is that this phase in your life, and quite possibly this whole lifetime, are about updating your spiritual views and making sure that your spiritual views reflect your actual values, and that they that you're not essentially married to the fears and pain and paranoia and struggle of people in the past, and in particular of your parents, and in particular of your mother. And so what you have an opportunity to do is to run through these teachings, make an account of what it is that you were taught. And you might as well include both parents. But I'm really concerned about the things that you were taught that in some way inhibited you. And there's a lot of things that parents say and do that inhibit just the natural vibrancy and creativity of their kids, and these things tend to follow us into adulthood, and they can be very challenging to shake because they tend to lurk below the surface of consciousness, and they tend to therefore be difficult to put into words and to express. And you sometimes, you know, for example, you might sit in therapy, you know, once a week for 3 years, and then one day say something that stuns you about something a parent said or did, and then you wake up to what impact that this had on you. This one seemingly meek idea that a parent said to you when you were 5 years old, and then you took that as being some form of orthodox or gospel truth. Suddenly you're awake to that. And this is one of the, you know, of the possibilities that is on tap. Sadly, I have seen through my personal work, my reading, my work with clients, my training in various contexts, and my different types of experimentation that I've done through life, that most of the way that we're held down is that our sexuality and curiosity are shut down. By far the best author on this subject is a man named Wilhelm Reich, who is a 20th century philosopher. And he, you know, a lot of people have talked about sexual repression. But his idea, to me, it almost takes my breath away every time I think of it, because we know that sexual repression exists, and we've heard things like how, you know, one priest making the whole community guilty can do the work of the entire regiment of the army, right? So it's much more efficient to just have a priest and all he eats is a little bread and wine, rather than having to, you know, feed 200 men and provide them with munitions and leadership and all this stuff and vacations. And when you can just have a priest making everyone guilty. And this is a concept of sexual repression that we have. But Reich has one that's almost painfully brilliant. And what he says is that really the whole business is about parents making their kids easier to manage. All of this repressive damage that we have actually starts in the household, and it doesn't start in the household as some kind of a grand agenda or like plan to sculpt and shape all of society. Rather, it starts as just wanting kids to be more manageable. And the way to make kids more manageable is to shut them down, to shut down their sexuality, shut down their curiosity, shut down their creativity, and then they're just easier. They don't have to be constantly thinking and doing things and experimenting and be curious and running around and basically being kids. The energy of the fifth house, Virgo, mentioned before, is very much about the way that a child apprehends reality. And I don't mean quite the kid crawling around bumping into things. That's more of a third house thing. I don't mean the child entirely dependent upon their parents for security and for the house to live in. That's more of a fourth house thing. I mean that the nature of a child where they're awake enough to realize that they have some ability to move around the earth and to manipulate the earth and to create experiences for themselves. And you have Virgo in this house. And Virgo, for all of its amazing properties, can be a bit constrained. And it can turn things into mental exercises. And I think one of the most interesting things about Taurus is that it has this juxtaposition between this strong physicality, right? There's always a physical quality to Taurians that you can't miss. I mean, my teacher, when he was like 75 years old, would walk down the street. If I'd see him on the street walking down the street, I would notice the way that his shoulders seemed to cut a swath of energy through the world. And he would guide his whole body with his shoulders. I've got other friend who's a woodsman, you know, who spends his entire life in the woods and can probably, even he's about, you know, 65 now, could probably split a cord of wood. And I could keep going with these examples. But there is also a mental quality. So the same guy who's a woodsman can beat any computer at chess. This is crazy. I mean, how can someone beat any computer at chess and also that same person can go out and split a cord of wood? So this is this, it's kind of, I mean, I don't want to call any sign the best sign, but fuck, this is a very utilitarian sign. I mean, this is useful for, you know, beating computers at chess and splitting wood and just orienting in the physical world of beauty. But this mental quality is something that it would be very helpful for you to learn what it is and blow it apart for a while. And this will free you mentally. It'll free you psychologically, which is one of the challenges of the moment, is to set yourself free psychologically so you can have more abundant experiences of the kind that you want in life. There's one more factor that is doing, I think, precisely that. And you know, the way the solar house system works is that, you know, you pick a sign to work with, whatever sign that might be. So let's say, for example, Taurus, and you then look at what comes next, and that's the second place, and that describes something that applies to the whole archetype of Taurus. So in your case, that's Gemini, which, you know, we could say, just continuing the example, allows you to maintain parallel value systems and to have vastly differing sets of assets. So kind of a funny joke of Taurus is the woodsman who can split the cord of wood and, organize the moving of 50 tons of rocks, and also, you know, his only possessions inside the house are chess books and his chess set. He's an interesting guy. And that, so there's your split set of assets, right? So you can look at your own life and say, you know, figure out what those two vastly different sets of talents or assets, or you might collect gemstones on one hand and then like pottery shards on the other hand, right? One is supposedly extremely valuable, one is supposedly completely worthless, and you may like your pottery shards better than your precious gemstones. It's one of those odd contradictions. All right, so in this beautifully kind of contradictory reality of Taurus, one of the things I've found is true enough to work with in an astrology chart is where we have Aries is where we seek ourselves. And so it's possible to have Aries in any one of the 12 houses, and you happen to have it in the last of the 12 because it's the sign right before your sun or right before your rising sign, possibly right before your moon. And the sign right before anything is 12th, given the distinction of being the 12th place. And I've explained this in a number of readings, and it's probably worth explaining again, now that Chiron is there, which is that this is the perfect contradiction in that Aries wants to be visibly, outwardly, energetically expressive, yet the 12th is where things can disappear. And so this can take all of that outwardly expressive energetic energy and put it behind a veil of the 12th house. And so one of the ways this propels you is that sense of where did all that I am energy go? Where did all that energy of Aries go? Like, where did that disappear? Well, it disappeared right next to you. It's right in the 12th house. And that can be this source of restlessness. And I think as I've quoted Alice Bailey many times, saying that Taurus is the blacksmith shop of the soul. And we see an example of that blacksmith shop of the soul in Aries, a sign of, Vulcan, I believe, is the ruler, the inhabitant of a blacksmith shop, a smithy, as they were called. And so this can, I mean, I don't know if I'm conveying how much energy can be charged around the quest to find and know yourself and then have that self be not quite readily available or not quite readily visible. Okay, but now that veil of the 12th is pierced by Chiron. Chiron is now in close to the beginning of a 9-year process of going through Aries, and that 9-year process will end with Chiron entering your sign. By the way, the sign of Chiron's discovery. Chiron could have been discovered anywhere, and the place it decided to be discovered was Taurus in 1977. So we're getting close to the 50th anniversary, but we've got like about how many years left to go? It's seven years to go to get to the 50th anniversary of the discovery of Chiron. And in those 7 years, Chiron is going to be moving through your 12th house. And so one of the really powerful images of being set free and tapping in and having access to yourself is Chiron in the 12th. And so this is giving you a window into a much deeper reality than you normally have access to. Uranus was there. That was more like, the old TV commercial, this is your brain on drugs, and they crack an egg into hot oil. I mean, that's kind of like what Uranus in the 12th feels like. And it's or like you're riding a motorcycle along the edge of the White Cliffs of Dover, like at the end of Quadrophenia. If you're young and you haven't seen that, you might watch the film by The Who, Quadrophenia. It's this utterly brilliant last scene, and that'll make you want to go to see the White Cliffs of Dover. And the 12th is this energy battery for you. It is this absolutely packed energy battery. And the 12th is also, in Vedic astrology, the house of the pleasures of the bed. So the deepest sexual material is contained in the 12th house. You could find sexual material in any of the houses without stretching. But in particular, we usually look in houses 5 and 8. 5 being the experimental, art-driven, risky-driven. The 8th being deep commitment, this desire for total surrender to a partner or surrender to an experience, or as one of my teachers, Dave Arner, says, the 8th is the house of the sex you want. It's the sex you want, you're admitting it to yourself. The 12th is the house of what you might not even admit to yourself. And we get into all kinds of existential reality, like what is the human form at all? What is the nature of this illusion? But while we're in this illusion of a multifaceted nature, there is this reservoir of deeply seated and urgently connected to your actual being, not who you say you are, who you actually are. And Chiron is spending its first years in Aries in a conjunction to a point called Salacia in the 12th house. And what this is doing is, I think, at least, I mean, I don't have you to listen to here, so I can only tell you what I'm seeing in the charts and in a sense channeling intuitively, is tapping you into a whole other layer of the way that it's foundational for you to conceive of your reality as integrated with your sexual being. And now you've got a conjunction of Chiron and Salacia in there, and so there is a lot of discovering who your true self is by doing the first thing of the 12th, which is admitting that which is too taboo to normally even admit to yourself. That's the kind of crazy bit of the 12th, right? The 8th is the secrets that you tell another person. The 4th is the family. You know, this is private. This doesn't leave the family, that kind of thing. The 12th is something that you might conceal from a partner, an understanding you have, or a desire you have, or a level of reality that might visit you in dreams every couple of years, or every couple of times a week, that you kind of mask over with normal waking consciousness. And so you now have a tap deep into that level of your awareness. And if you work this tap, if you learn where it goes and how to use it, what you've got is a kind of a geothermal pipeline into massively abundant vital force energy. To access it, though, you have to do two things, really. One is to be unusually honest with yourself about who you are, what you feel, what you want, and what that thing you keep dreaming is. And the second is cultivate a comfort level with the element of you that you might think of as being the most taboo and the most challenging of like who you thought you were and everyday normal polite society. But you're in revolutionary mode. You're honest in your sign. We can almost look no further than that. We can almost look no further than any one of these transits, and describe this growth process that you're in right now. I think of all the signs, Taurus is one of the ones that's getting these super intense changes in the most gentle way. There are people going through a lot harder expressions of this astrology than you are, and people having their worlds crumble. And you have the ability to just pretty much surf this energy and ride these waves. All right, don't forget to check in with your sign rising. Any questions or thoughts, I'm easily found at efc@bookofblue.com. And it's been a pleasure doing this work and opening up these doorways with you. Thanks for trusting me in that process, and bye for now.